And you're welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. My name is Hugh Cal, beside you Mick Lennon from RTE Sports Online and Wes Liddy, RTE Rugby Editor. I don't know why we're doing a podcast about rugby, lads. We haven't played a match in 6 months. We're not going to play a match for the rest of the year, it looks like, with the coronavirus. So really don't have much to talk about, Wes, do we?
Well, we could talk about anything really, Hugh. It doesn't have to be rugby, you know. We could expand our horizons for an hour or so if you want. Or not.
Yeah. Look, it's we can say the do's or don'ts that will come down the line. It does look like at the moment, as things stand, that the date earmarked for the finishing of the Six Nations Championship, playing the games that have been cancelled or postponed, is around about the 31st of October, before the November Autumn Series begins and just after the first two rounds of Europe, which probably makes sense if it can happen, but it's all very much too easy.
We were out there on Monday because we just had a feeling that it would be called, and Andy Farrell, it was supposed to be two Ireland players to come out and do media, and Andy Farrell then was put up just to kind of put to wrap on it, because maybe an hour before that the Six Nations confirmed that the France match was off.
Yeah,
and you know, it's much of a guessing game for him as it is for everyone else, and we were he was saying everything's up in the air. It's so difficult to make any comment about anything. And I just tried to see how would it affect. I didn't think I'd get an answer, but asked him how would it affect his approach to the Australia tour, because obviously it would have been a kind of a clean slate. The Six Nations would have been behind him and he could have had a bit of room for, you know, improvisation or some sort of experimentation. Yeah. And what happened now is they'll have to play the Australian matches while they're still in the mix for a championship. And how does that affect? Was he going to maybe bring an end to the career of some guys over the summer? And can he afford to do that now?
Well, it's, you know, nothing is guaranteed. Like, when people are talking about the Champions Cup, you know, being played out, as things stand, you'd have to say, like, sport now knows its place in society, which is, if we can do it, great.
Some,
but sorry, lads.
Some do.
As a disease
get in the back, get down the back of the bus. I do say this, by the way, when we're in the middle of Cheltenham and there are 65,000 people going to Presby Park today, to go and knock knees with each other.
Probably 25,000 Irish due back over the next 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, to spread their good deeds. And
yeah, I know you're a big horse racing fan, but I can't get my head around that one. But I mean, it seems like they're making peace more and more with the inevitability of a larger scale shutdown. So, yeah, I mean,
Scotland and Wales is going ahead this weekend. That's going ahead.
Yeah,
And I was listening to Tom English talk about this or writing about it, and he's saying there isn't even been a question mark over not going ahead. So, I don't know.
Yeah, well, maybe the coronavirus has impacted the health minister's judgment in the UK as well. So
yeah, it does seem so.
Do they have better hand hygiene in the Scotland Wales fans?
Maybe. I don't know. I find it amazing. Doctors putting up videos on Twitter telling people how to wash their hands. I mean, you know.
It's very important, Hugh.
We've been washing our hands for 40-odd years, Wes.
Maybe you haven't been doing it properly.
And I think people, after the coronavirus goes, I think they should still wash their hands and still
sneeze
into the tissues.
Don't do the Danny Healy Ray line and thinking, according to Mallow News, right, listen, coronavirus or not, I'll be washing my hands twice a year as normal and the coronavirus can feck off. Anyway, Eddie O'Sullivan, how are you?
I'm not sure after that.
We've got to talk about something because there's no rugby going on at the moment. In terms of 2001 and foot and mouth, it's not really comparable, Eddie. It's a completely different thing as such. But I guess just for what Mick was saying there about Andy Farrell and the squad, they're left in limbo, but, you know, nobody has any answers at the moment. So he's just got to get on with things, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the whole waiting for the inevitable was bizarre because, you know, you're out training, pretending there's a game going to be on that you're pretty sure isn't going to be on. So it's like, it's a weird feeling because in fairness, these guys are usually so focused on what's happening next. All things are renaming as France or Paris this weekend, and you're trying to train and get ready for it mentally, but you know there's a good chance you're not going to be in Paris. So that's a bizarre place to be. But look, it's not the end of the world in that respect. The thought on the summer tour for me is that I think it might be a slight advantage to them rather than a disruption, is that the summer tour is a chance for him to maybe set out his stall more with regard, you know, to getting, like, if you think about, he's on a bit of a journey in his first season. Your first season in charge is about setting out your stall, and that means, you know, getting things to run the way you want them to run. Like, I mean, he's not the same coach as Joe Schmidt. He's going to do things differently, and that might be just operational. It could be communication, obviously tactics. So it's hard enough to do that in the build-up to a Six Nations because the time is very short. Like, despite the fact we knew he was taking over, he really didn't get his hands on the players, you know, until only for a few sessions for the Six Nations. So he's still in that space where he's trying to set out his stall and get himself, get his stamp on the team. And I think the summer tour is a great way to do that, because you're away from Ireland. There's not a huge amount of people following exactly what's going on, because, you know, people tend to dial out in the summer. We're aware they're going on. We watch the games, but we're not as engaged. So here's that space to kind of spend that tour getting everybody on the same page exactly as he wants them. And I think when he comes back in the autumn, then he's probably in a better place to have a tilt at the final two games, you know, or maybe win the championship, depending on how the results go. So I would think it's not the worst thing in the world from and I suppose maybe the only, looking back, that the fact that the last game of the championship for them was a really bad outing in Twickenham will leave a sour taste in your mouth. And that sour taste doesn't go away, to be honest. So maybe that's the only thing, is he can't get rid of that. But he can certainly prepare to get rid of it in the autumn.
It's interesting, you know, I'm dying to see, Wes, what the Andy Farrell stamp is on this team, because we're not going to find out, as Eddie said, for a while now. And maybe that's okay. And he deserves a bit of time to settle into the job before we see the fruits of what he's trying to do. But if you look at the performances so far, Scotland should have beaten us. England hammered us, and we beat Wales, who haven't won a match. Right, so, I don't know. It does seem like he has a good bit of work to do, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, Wales were competitive enough, though, if you look at the French and the English games. I mean, England probably beat them better than the scoreline suggests. But, yeah, I mean, I think I agree with Eddie. It's kind of, I suppose, the November series always takes on an experimental tone, but a slightly less pressurised environment than the Six Nations. So, in a way, kind of, judgment on him has been deferred for a while. And, yeah. You know, it could be advantageous, I suppose. I mean, what you lose in your preparation window now, like, they have a nice chunk of time together in the autumn now. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, how do you know how to spin this, really? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's happened. Yeah. There's very little.
He has more
done.
Time, so we just give him that time and see what happens then. Do we know, Mick, what the story was with Tuilagi and when he will find out his suspension? Or
No, I'm not sure. I mean, it's automatic, as far as I know, until it goes, if he decides to appeal it. I know.
Well, is Eddie Jones not insisting, given his reaction to
That was kind of an incredible reaction, and I wonder what the ulterior motive was behind that, because if I think Eddie Jones is smart enough to know that that is a stonewall red card tackle. And
I don't know if he believes even, that.
Well, am I giving him too much credit?
I don't think Eddie O'Sullivan agrees it's necessarily a stonewall red card.
Eddie?
No, I think there's a... I'm not saying it's not a bad tackle, and I think straight off the bat it's a red card. A shoulder charge to the head or neck area is dangerous red card. But the problem with the law is written is that there is mitigation, and there is mitigation because one of the facts of mitigation is, did the player lower their body prior to the tackle? And they can lower their body by tripping, grounding the ball, or actually being tackled. And if you look at George North, he was tackled from behind and he was falling. So during the contact, what really caused the contact to North's head was the fact that he was falling. And I'm not getting away from the fact it was a horrific tackle and it looked awful, and it could have been awful. North could have got really badly hurt. But under the law, the way they've structured the law, when Tuilagi is sitting in front of the discipline committee, he'll have a barrister sitting beside him who'll point out the law says this. And I think he has a case that should have been reduced to a yellow. And he might get off of this. And it, nobody likes to say that because it's such a bad tackle. You say, oh, you can't have that. But it's not what you can and can't have, is what the law says.
I think the mitigation, Eddie, I think it says that it can be used as a mitigation factor. It's not mandatory that it is mitigated. You know, there is some room for interpretation there.
I get that, Michael. I'm just pointing out the If the barrister says to you, why can't that be mitigating? It's actually covered under the law in black and white.
Sure, yeah.
If the player's falling. So you have to explain then why you're still going to give the guy a red card because his mitigation. So I'm not saying it's not a stone cold dead red card. He might still stand, but I think any barrister worth his salt will make a very strong argument that had George North not fallen, Tuilagi wouldn't have not hit him in the head or neck area. And then it's not a red card. So like that's the problem they have. Like everyone sees it and goes, oh, that's horrendous, that's a red card. And yeah, on the first viewing. But I'm just saying what I think the law will play out as. I could be wrong, I'm just giving an opinion. It's not, I don't think it's black and white as everyone says it is, despite the fact it looks black and white.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see how it plays out. What did you make of Eddie Jones' comments though, Eddie? And I do enjoy some of the stuff he has to say, but I was kind of scratching my head. 16 against 13. He basically tried to hang the referee out to dry. And I just wonder, should there not be a consequence of what he said there, given he directly went after an official who, by all accounts, and judging from what most people had to say on the match, did a pretty decent job at the weekend?
Yeah, I think there's two aspects to Eddie Jones' comments. One is the comment on that, and by me saying I don't think this might be a red card does not mean I agree with Eddie Jones. Eddie Jones made the point, which was ludicrous, that there was no case to answer. There was nothing wrong with that tackle, which is insane. But Michael Checa made the same argument for a red card in the World Cup. You know, like, I don't know what it is, but like, to me, that was a sanctionable offence. Now, the disagreement might be on the level of sanction. So to make the case, Billy Jones made the case, there was nothing wrong with that tackle. It was just beggar's belief. Because a coach of his calibre and his experience saying that does not help what we're trying to eradicate from the game is the, you know, these dangerous tackles. And Tuilagi's tackle was dangerous. So that's one aspect of it. And that's completely different, actually, than the second aspect, which you asked me about, is that, you know, having a go at the referee and saying it was 16 against 13. Again, I would be amazed if he gets away with that. Because if he gets away with that, they've just opened the door again on coaches going after referees.
Yeah.
And they have been very tough on it recently. And I get it. Look, I've finished games and I wanted to scream at the referee because I think he's made some bad calls and it's cost us the game. But you have to hold your powder dry and you can talk to the referee after, but to go public on it, again, sends the wrong message. And every coach in the world will see that as the green light. So I'm just waiting for this to be called out by the World Rugby. But the fact they're saying stum on it is amazing to me because it was a blatant...
It was an attack on the referee, and you know, yeah, when you say that it's 16 against 13, you're directly questioning the integrity,
absolutely,
and the 100%. Neutrality of the referee.
It wasn't even subtle, you know. So I can't believe there's nothing being said about that. I beg us believe the World Rugby are sitting back on this, because effectively the next coach that says something, and they try and reel it in, he'll just turn on and say, well, Eddie Jones said it, and exactly, that was okay. So they can't have a double standard on this. They've got to come down heavy on it. And I'm just waiting. The silence is deafening on that one for me.
What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, as you say, some of his utterances are entertaining over the years, but without getting too moralistic about it, I mean, they're certainly kind of reveling in their aggressive approach at the minute, and you know, good luck to him, but they are kind of teetering over the line repeatedly over the last number of games, and I there's obviously no instruction to do that, but you know, you just wonder when these kind of utterances happen so regularly.
Is there something more than...
Well, is it inevitable that people are going to stray over the edge in the game? If you're being constantly told, you know, if you're openly trading on not just a physical approach, which there's nothing wrong with, and I'd hope every team would, but veering into intimidation, which again, it isn't illegal to intimidate people, no. But if you're saying that, if you're openly going like that, and also your coach is making comments along this line, I think it's almost inevitable that a certain, like, I don't know, too harsh a word maybe, but a certain lawlessness can develop amongst the players. And I think I'd be interested to hear what Eddie thinks. Like, he knows Eddie Jones a long time and knows him quite well, to my knowledge. But I think there's a danger that they are starting to cross the line repeatedly now, and he's going to have to take his fair share of responsibility for that.
Well, I think I agree with Wesley there. I think because they're on, or if not across the line at times, in their physicality, and we've seen that. What you notice it is that if there's any sort of a pulling and dragging, like what we call lapel shaking, because nobody throws a punch anymore. And as we know, if you throw a punch, you're out the gate. So, but there's a lot of lapel shaking in those afters, and fellas pushing and pulling and dragging. And it's ironic that the English captain is always in the middle of it, Owen Farrell. So he's the guy then has to go over to talk to the referee, who's telling him to talk to his team about not getting involved in that, and he's in the middle of it. So there is a sense that England are right on the edge physically. And I think that's where England have gone after the World Cup. I think there has been a change in tack in the way they play. I mean, I thought their World Cup rugby was magnificent. I mean, they were superb against the All Blacks. And then they lost to South Africa, who basically bullied them. And I think they've Eddie might have recalibrated that we need to go back to what we're good at as being first and foremost purely physical, on the edge, on the bubble, in people's faces. And that's a risky place to go because it can boil over very quickly. And, you know, that's, as I say, there's a high risk strategy in that. I think the second thing about Eddie Jones is, and he's a very smart coach, we know that, very experienced coach. I think he's very frustrated at the moment, the way the bigger picture's playing out. Like, obviously, he's gutted after World Cup, as they all are, because I think they felt if they played South Africa the day after, you know, they might have beaten South Africa, that the World Cup final didn't reflect who they were. They didn't give their best shot on the day. And that's very annoying because World Cup's opportunities don't come very often. I remember he lost the World Cup final as well with Australia to England in 2003. So, like, Eddie, that would be burning him there. He had a chance in the Six Nations to maybe kick on and make a statement that the World Cup was behind him. But if you think about it, they have blown a Six Nations there. Well, they may win it, but they possibly have blown a Six Nations by not getting a bonus point against Ireland when they were well in position to do, and not get a bonus point again against Wales when they're well in position to do. If they'd got those two bonus points, they'd be in complete control of the championship now. And that's wrangling with him as well. So I think he's very frustrated. And that may have fed into him, you know, given the interview we gave after the game in the heat of the moment. Although someone of his experience should never make that mistake. But I think there's that frustration that's going on and the pivot away to a more physical game, and they're on the bubble all the time. And maybe the players are frustrated as well. So if you tell your players to be more aggressive, and there's an underlying frustration there, well, guess what happens when fellas go too far, you know?
Eddie, just as a brief aside, just when you were talking about that judiciary process that Manu Tuilagi or whoever will enter into this week, I suppose for people who haven't been in that situation, so you've obviously been there with players over the years, does it take on all the kind of seriousness and formalities of a judicial appointment outside of sport, or what's the whole atmosphere when you arrive at these sentencing, so to speak?
It's like being in court. There's barristers on both sides. It's very formal, and there's a whole process to it. And it's not exactly as formal. There's nobody sitting there with wigs and gowns, and there's no judge. But it's got that sense of a courtroom about it. And the irony of it is that, you know, we've seen players like get a pretty raw deal at these sometimes because there is a slightly less formal in the court. But like I remember Paul O'Connell back in, I think it was 2005, we'd lost Triple Crown in Cardiff when Wales won the Grand Slam with Mike Ruddock. And there was a bit of a chamois off a mall in that game, and Paul got cited, and I forget who the Welsh player was. And it was one of those harmless chamois on the ground, and the both of them got up, the referee went back, they shook hands and went on, but was cited. And we went to that, and Paul almost missed the Heineken Cup quarterfinal after it because the ban he got, and there's a story about that as well, but the ban he got, he just about dodged it. So it could have been very serious for the chamois on the ground, which you see every day in the game, and usually people go on, especially when the players shook hands immediately after and picked each other up. It wasn't protracted or anything. So then you see that. And then we've seen other cases where, you know, a barrister goes in and makes a great case and a player who should be suspended gets off. So there is a sense of the courtroom drama about it. And you don't know going in there how it'll play out. And the thing about this is now it's very serious. Like if Tuilagi does that red card holds, that's another strike against them on his record. Do you have a record like when you go in here? How many times have you been yellow carded? How many times have you been red carded? So your disciplinary record sits. So if Tuilagi was to fall foul again,
his is poor at this point.
In a few months' time, his record will stand against him. So it is, as you say, it's very formal. It's like being in court, and it's very kind of. It's a lot of pressure on everybody because you don't know the outcome. It could go either way on you.
Can I ask you where you stand on the Joe Marler, Alwyn Jones incident, Eddie? There was a huge amount of outrage on social media in the immediate aftermath of it. Alwyn Jones handled the whole issue in the post-match press conference quite well, I thought, and he spoke very well about it. But is this, on the one side, you have some people saying, ah, look, it was a bit of a joke and a laugh. There's nothing, it's not a sexual assault. And other people saying, you just cannot do this to another person. Where do you stand on this?
Yeah, well, I must say that I thought when Jones was brilliant. Like, he's a classic guy. He was very calm about the whole thing. But I think he made a brilliant point. Like, this is completely unacceptable from Marler. And Marler likes to play as we were saying on Monday night against said the Village Idiot, like, but what he did to Wyn Jones, I thought there was a little bit of hope in that Wyn Jones would react and throw a punch. So it wasn't as innocent as I believe as everybody thinks. Mallers, when it comes to that sort of carry on, knew what he was doing. So I think he was hoped for a reaction from Wyn Jones. The second thing is that the fact he did that at all, he should get pounded for it, because that is not funny under any circumstances. It's not a joke. It's not acceptable to grow up somebody's genitals. And, like, you now have the case of kids seeing that, and you have to say to kids, oh, by the way, I know you didn't get a red card, but that's not acceptable. Like, why do we have to explain that to kids because Joe Marler thinks it's funny to do it? Mm. Like, I'm pretty incensed by that, because he needs to be sent a message, Marler, that, you know, get cop on to yourself, to act like a professional athlete. If you want to draw a salary, you're just act like a professional. So I would throw the book at him for that. I don't have any excuse. And this, I see some of the English players now rolling out like the usual, you know, he's a great guy and everyone knows Joe, he's a bit of fun, you know. I don't care. And they should be. I thought the best reaction was Clive Woodward wrote a piece on Monday and he hammered Marler and said he was an embarrassment, and I agree with Clive Woodward on that.
Can I put it to you, if this was 20 years ago, if this was when you were playing, Eddie, when there weren't a camera on every single player,
that was way more than 20 years ago.
Alwyn Jones would have absolutely bait the head off Joe Marler for doing that.
Oh yeah, I mean, there would have been an all-in brawl. Yeah. By the way, I wasn't playing 20 years ago, it's much longer.
I was trying to give you a bit of credit in the bank.
Yeah,
there.
I know, but everybody knows the truth here. Let's not gild the lily too much. But yeah, I think, yeah, absolutely. If that was going back in the day when there was no cameras and that, I guarantee you Wyn Jones would have absolutely pounded him, and then could have been a 20-man brawl there,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They'd put him a bench clearer. But look, that's not good either. That's not what the game is about. So I think if you're going to avoid those all-in brawls, which nobody wants, then you have to take the right action against somebody who was trying to precipitate something like that.
Okay.
Maybe.
I think Marler's, to me, I've always thought he was a bit of an idiot the way he went about his business, and he just proved it last Saturday.
Maybe Jones could have done a bit better there, because he turned around to the linesman and asked him if he saw it. And he could have approached the ref and asked him to have a look at it, the same way if somebody got a bite or a gouge, you would ask him, and then
yeah,
he would. So 138 caps.
I don't think that's his place to do that.
It's not, though.
Hold on, if 138 caps, he's the captain. He can say to the ref, there's a gouge, there's a bite there, can you check it? And so why was this different? Was he just shocked? Because it kind of was a shocking incident to see. Maybe he was a bit stunned.
I think we can probably forgive him for being a bit, you know, caught in the headlights, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it was provocation, I would say, Eddie, when you were saying that people didn't see that.
Absolutely.
He was trying to get Jones to hit him a smack or do something to get him sent off.
But I think players are often reticent to draw attention to other players' foul play, because they're often hammered for that. Like, I remember Brian O'Driscoll, there was a lot of gouging in a game between ourselves and Argentina in Madison Road, and Brian O'Driscoll was accused of asking the referee to check for gouging, you know, and it was more like he was pilloried for going to the ref and whinging. You know, that. So players are often, and I'm not saying it's the right thing, Mikael, I think you know, he could have taken that route, and I don't think anyone would have criticised him. But there's a bit of something in the back of a player's head saying, I don't want to come across as a whinger. Like, there's officials there to do that, to look after that. So maybe that's what went through Wyn Jones' head. But you're right, though. He could have raised it. But anyway, look, it's still, I think Wyn Jones is still confident. He's a very experienced guy, that this would be seen by cameras. Like, it would come out eventually, like, you know. So maybe he just said, I'm just going to let it take its course, you know.
Okay, Eddie, I don't know when we're going to talk again, to be honest with you. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. Leo Varadkar, the
Taoiseach. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. Yeah, just before the Christmas internationals. Mind yourself. Thanks so much for your time.
Cheers, guys.
Super. Hello. Thanks a lot. I want to bring in Lindsay Peat, if I can, because she's waiting patiently on the line. Lindsay, great to have you on.
Thanks, Mary. How are you?
Good. Can I just get your perspective on the Joe Marler, Alwyn Jones incident? And I'm wondering, does this happen at all in the women's game? Is it something that you have come across, or does it seem to be confined to the men's game? Not very often at all, but like, just from your perspective as a player, what did you make of that whole incident?
Oh God, you don't want Joe Marler to be making those kind of impacts in a game. It's just, there's no place in anywhere for that kind of messing, and he was trying to just provoke, but I'd say poor Alvin Jones still wondering, did that actually happen?
Yeah.
You know, it's such a grey area and you never see it happen. It certainly wouldn't happen in the women's game.
I've never seen it, and that's why I wanted to get your thoughts on it, because I have I've done a lot of conference moves. I've never seen it, ever seen it.
It's extremely disrespectful to the person and someone he's probably played with through the years, whether, you know, combined teams. And it's just something... Right, grand, if lads are messing on a night out, grand, you could probably understand that kind of stuff, even though you'd be sort of like, it's kind of weird, because they're grown adults and you're trying to, again, there's a lot of responsibility on professional athletes and athletes in the, you know, on a stage and for the world to see. It does put a lot of pressure to continue to uphold a professional manner and stance, and, you know, that's his responsibility as a paid professional. And I think Eddie had brought it up during the week on the Against the Head that, you know, if it was in a place of work, there are rules, and rules in there for a reason, to protect people against this like a behaviour. And listen, we can laugh it off if something's a joke, but unfortunately, players are there as an example and they have to lead by example, and there's just no place in the game for it. And I hope it'll be dealt with. I'm sure, you know, people are still in gobsmacked by it, because again, I don't think it happens very often, you know, and
it doesn't,
you're like
really.
Still asking yourself, did that actually happen?
So
I'm sure he, as much as he thought maybe he was having the crack, it's unfortunately it was not the time or place.
There's absolutely
no time or place for it, but certainly
it's a weird
on a rugby pitch.
It's a weird time and place to be an international rugby player, I imagine, Lindsay. How are you guys coping with all these cancellations, postponements, delays? I mean, you haven't played a game now since the England match, so it must be difficult.
It's extremely difficult because, especially the way the 15th programme is ran, you know, we're in for a certain period that's quite intense, and now we're released back to our clubs pretty early, having missed out now on camps and obviously test matches that are too few and far between for us. We're obviously now going into a period of preparation for World Cup qualification, and that really has gone against us on many levels, because obviously, you know, we wanted to finish the three home, you know, with three home wins and two good performances against France and England, and obviously up ourselves in the world ranking to give ourselves the best chance for that qualification. And now that's up in the air. So it's pretty disruptive for us, especially. I know obviously everyone is affected.
Yeah.
But the way the programme is run and what we're trying to achieve, you know, in the short time we have together, really hasn't done us any favours now at all.
Can I ask, have you noticed a difference in the squad this year and the level of performances versus last year? We had Adam on the show, on the programme, a couple of weeks ago, and he said he had definitely seen an improvement. But for you as a player as well, is it a different camp? Is it a better camp and squad this season than last?
Yeah, 100%. So I think we did allude to the fact that last year, unfortunately, we had a number of key injuries. I mean, you can see Cliona Maloney this year is having a tournament, you know, of her life. She's been very unlucky with injury. We have Ciara Cooney back in after a very disrupted 18 months in and out between serious injuries. We had obviously Bavin, who was of age, which is funny to come up to a senior setup. Aoife Doyle is in, you know, so we had players that had either moved, say, from sevens or had come to sort of that time where they had made an impact and it was a poor year last year, but it was a year you need, because unfortunately the club level and even interprovincial isn't at the level of test matches. So when you go into a tournament, you really just have to keep going and keep plugging away. And it was a poor year, but you know, we were very honest both from a managerial and a player point and what we needed to improve. And I think people come in fitter. I think our skill base was a lot more. I think Kieran Hallett, who was our defensive coach, has made a huge impact to us. And I think you can see that from our defensive display. Wasn't a great attacking performance against England, but certainly, you know, our endeavour and our defence really kept England to 27 points. I mean, you've seen how easy they got scores against Wales last week. You know, we have a lot of things to be very proud of.
The amount of possession that you had as well. I know you're saying that, you know, certain things didn't click in attack and there's areas for improvement there, but you did have an awful lot of possession, which suggests that there are a lot of fundamentals and basics that are actually going very well for Ireland at the moment.
Oh, hugely. And you know the difference here between getting that possession a lot quicker is, unfortunately, our ruck ball was sort of silver to gold. So, you know, it was very slow ball and it gave England... You don't want England being able to set up a full line of attack, because the speed that they come off their line to smash it is, you know, you want to try and negate that. So if we could have fixed our ruck speed at time and been a little bit more aggressive Against a very well-oiled England team, I think we would have done a lot more with that possession. So, I mean, that's a key thing we're going to work on going forward. It would have been a key thing we would have worked on for the French game. And obviously now we can't put that into practice. So that's unfortunately, we're going well and we really needed those test matches. Obviously, from a very selfish individual point of view, I could be hopefully back for the refixed games. But
yeah.
It certainly is, you know, from an overall squad development, you know, I'm certainly disappointed as the girls are because... we do get very little time together, and it's been good time. And I have to say, it's been a very enjoyable series so far.
Yeah, you do. The body language seems to be an awful lot different versus this time last year. So that has to be a good sign.
Yeah, really good sign. Everyone's bought in. Everyone's really, you know, we've leadership. The leadership group would work very much with the player group. We'd feed back to management, and we really try and just, you know, try and dissect everything and re-put it back together and then filter it back to work on specific things of training. So I think everyone really is on the same page. We're on the same journey on that train and just trying to pick up speed and momentum going into a very important part of our journey and qualifying for this World Cup in 2021.
How much longer do you think you can keep going, Lindsay? And I say this because it still takes me back each season that you're back there. I look at the date of birth just to make sure I have all the ages right. And yeah, you're putting myself, Wes, and Mick to shame here, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose Alison Miller says this to me. My rugby playing age is pretty young and, you know, just the body hasn't gone through so much. But obviously now sitting here with a recovering broken leg, it's touch wood, one of my only serious injuries I've had so far in a 20-year career. So, look, to be honest, if the lads feel I can do a job and I'm fit and healthy and, you know, fighting as much as a jersey and fighting something, then I'll keep going as long as it doesn't affect, you know, family life or any of that outside it. So there's probably not too much left for me, but you know,
okay.
We
well,
only
I don't wanna, I don't, I'm not, I don't want you to, you know, to feel like you're forced into any kind of announcement. I'm just kind of just wondering how you have been this season and how the body has been holding up. But obviously, you still feel like you've got a lot
to
offer.
It's gone well, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
And I did commit to you know, I do want to qualify for this World Cup. All going well, so
yeah.
We'll see how we recover from this injury. And yeah, the body is going well.
Okay.
Keep myself as fit as possible, and it's hard, you know, it's tedious, and it's nearly like having OCD, and you have to,
yeah.
I have to look after myself a lot more than the younger lads.
Yeah.
But what they do is keep me going because I always try to outdo them. So
great
until the. And that leaves me, I suppose, we'll keep going.
And there's a huge target of the World Cup there as well. So, I mean...
Yeah.
Right, okay, brilliant. Look, Lindsay, it's been great to have you on. I know it's been a difficult few weeks for everyone involved in all camps, but thanks for your time and talk to you soon, hopefully.
No, thanks for the support.
Cheers.
Mind yourself, chat.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, Lindsay Pete there. Yeah, look, it must be just crap for players. You train. Oh, the match is gone. Sure, what are we going to do now? Can we go and have a few points? Maybe have three or four, but back in camp tomorrow because we don't know what's going to happen. The clubs, Champions Cup, what's going to happen there? They just don't know. And they keep training. They keep having to keep themselves at a certain level of fitness with zero outcome, you know, and in terms of what's going to happen. So.
Exactly. And even, I was just reading this morning, Ian Keatley is on his way back to Italy. So after they played the Dragons, they came back to Ireland and his wife and daughter are still here and he's on his way back to Italy to train with Benetton because they've no games lined up, but they are still training away in stricter
the
circumstances.
The World Cup meant to be on in Italy?
In Northern Italy.
It is.
There's no chance that's happening.
None. The Olympic Games are now, there's a leaked report yesterday which then they had to roll back on. The
NBA
season
suspended.
Is gone.
Slightly different indoor arenas, but...
Yeah, this is all time specific to right now. The Taoiseach's about to make a statement. You'll all know what he has to say in the next few minutes or so. But look, it looks like schools are going to be shut down. Colleges, national or public transport will be limited. Look, we just don't know. So, I mean... This could be the last rugby podcast for quite some time, lads.
You'll do it from home, Hugh. You'll be all right.
Listen, the six people who tune in every week to hear us, lads, are going to be devastated. If you can hold on, lads, for a few months, we'll be back at some stage.
Yeah.
Right, we're done for today. Your thoughts, Scotland, Wales, who do you fancy?
I don't care.
Yeah.
No. Wales.
Okay, I'll go for Scotland. But again, do we care? Okay, thanks for your time and we'll talk to you soon.